To remind all participants, this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Who wants to do the roll call?
Can I do it for you,
please,
Ray?
Please.
On the call, we have yourself, Ray Fassett. And for staff, we have Ken Bauer, Rob Hogarth, Julie Headland, and Glenda Saint-Jean, myself. We have apologies from Wolf Ulrich Knoben, and Avery Doria will be joining the call late. Thank you, Ray.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so as an agenda today, I think we are still reviewing absentee language, ironing out some more recent flushing out of details that have gone on. One thing I do want to state for the record is that staff support in helping us draft this language has been very helpful, and in no way, in my view as the chair, has sought to influence the outcome of any such language, but has simply looked to support us hearing various views and positions as articulated. And I think that staff support has done an outstanding job in doing that for our work team. So with that said, I would, and since I am the only work team member on the call presently, I do need some staff support cooperation with regards to a request that I recently received from Philip Shepherd, the chair of the OSC, and I have forwarded to the list, which you should all have. So I'm going to need, basically, Julie, I'm going to need your help on this one, and I would like to take care of it now as a matter of housekeeping, even though I'm only on the call. I think it is sort of between work team members or me and staff. So, Julie, do you have this email that I sent? It's a forwarded email to our GCOT list that has a forward OSC work plan?
Ray, this is Julie. Yes, I do have that message. The OSC work plan actually is something that Ken and I worked on. In fact, I relied heavily on Ken as far as identifying the action items for this work team, since so many of them involve the operating procedures, as you know, in trying to determine what work has been done and what work remains. So I see that he's asking whether or not you concur with the items identified. Those at least were the identified items that Ken and I had noted.
Good. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I get that. So, first of all, thank you for supporting us that way. And what I wanted to do was, when Philip sent that to me, was basically give a quick reply. Yep, looks good to me. But unfortunately, when I opened it up, I couldn't follow it very well. So, and I know I'm not the swiftest guy in the block, but I figured if I couldn't follow it real well, then others that may look at it may not understand a thing in there. Then what utility is it, you know? So if you don't mind, and since I'm the only one on the call anyway, and this is more of a housekeeping issue.
No, Ray, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. Ron just got in. I was having some trouble getting into the call.
Well, Ron, can you leave so I can get this done? With
sorry, guys. Sorry, I'll just jump off and come back.
No. Don't go. Actually, your input on this could be helpful, too, because like I said, what I was just saying was, as I opened it up, and again, while it may not make sense to me, maybe it makes sense to others. But so maybe if we can just look at this real quick, and then I can go back to Philip and say, yeah, it looks good to me. Would you guys mind doing that?
It's certainly fine with me, Ray. This is Julie. Unfortunately, I don't have the document in front of me, so I'll have to go along with the rest of you, and maybe Ken can help out. Unfortunately, my computer is being getting new antivirus software. I'm in the D.C. office, and I had to give it up at some point. And so this is the point at which I gave it up, unfortunately. But
No, that's okay. This would be one of those unforeseen absentee instances, right?
There we are.
It's your computer.
My computer's just not here.
Yeah, your computer is absent. We didn't think about that that problem.
Right.
How do we...
And I do have the document open in front of me, so I participated. I helped Julie with it, so I think I can walk us through it.
Yeah, okay, great. So, again, I just want to say thank you for taking the lead on that. So not much more commentary, but other than to say, as we talked on the registry constituency call, I think last call, one of the improvements we really have seen from ICANN as an organization is the support that has been given to the various policy groups, et cetera, and this is just a great example of that in my view. So I appreciate it. All right, so let's look at the deliverable item. It says GNSO operating procedures, GOP, table of contents. Ken will add table of contents on completion. And then it says complete, and over here it says not an OSC task. What does that mean?
This is Ken. I think the blue items are more sort of housekeeping items. So what's happening is the current GNSO operating procedures do not have a table of contents. And I made a recommendation to Julie and Rob that we should add a table of contents. The procedures are getting kind of long now, right? There will be maybe 7 or 8, maybe 9 chapters in it by the time we are finished with everything. And so I've already done it. You have not seen it yet because it's really just a housekeeping matter. The next time we formally revise the GOP, which will maybe it'll be for abstentions, maybe it'll be for board seat elections. I'm not sure what the council approval action will be. But once we put a new version out, I would like to do two things. One is to add a table of contents. And as you'll see at the bottom, I want to add a Section 9 document revisions. Actually, it's going to be an appendix kind of thing, so that we can keep track of how this document changes over time.
Yeah. Okay, so let me just jump down to the second row where it says Section 1 Introduction and Scope, and then it says no action required. I guess maybe what let me hold on. We've got deliverable item status 14.
If I might Julie had in mind there was to be exhaustive with respect to what is in the procedures today. The other alternative would be just put the things down that need to be done. But in this case, we listed everything that's currently in the procedures and whether action was required or not.
Okay.
So it's a little like a table of contents.
Yeah. Okay. So Philip is looking for a work plan. What is going to be completed? And correct me where I'm wrong here, because I don't have dates written down. So, but what I understand is what will be completed by our work team by Brussels.
Right.
Correct?
Yes.
By
and
Brussels.
Unless Julie has what we could do today, for example, is just simplify this worksheet a little bit, right? The things that are not going to be done by Brussels or any other time, we could just take them out of the table. For example, Section 1, there isn't anything that's being requested or being done at the moment with that. And if it makes it a little easier, we could just delete that row.
All right. Well, how about even a higher level? Does it make sense to say to Philip, our main task is the GNSO Council Rules of Procedure? We anticipate a final document sent to the OSC by Brussels without getting into the nitty-gritty of what the various sections are that we're looking at. Is there any pushback going on anywhere? I know there isn't. But, for example, like we're looking at absentee voting. Does it really matter that we say to Philip at this point, well, we think absentee voting will be completed by Brussels? Or is it just sufficient to say we really have one task, and that's the rules of procedure that we think can realistically be accomplished by Brussels?
Ray, this is Ken. I don't think I would go that route.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of sections in the procedures that are not being touched, and requiring all the council members to read the... I'm not sure how to differentiate that which is being newly added, changed, amended, as it were, versus stuff that is not being touched at all. And I think it might be easier to deal with them section at a time. So the task of the GCOT is Section 2.1 term limits, right? Section 2.4 board seat elections, Section 3.8 vacancies and absences, and Section 4. all the other things are not being touched, and so there.
But there have been ones that have been touched and are completed. How is he going to know which ones those are?
I don't believe anything has been completed yet. Section 4 was not. I think didn't we pull that back?
Yeah, but this is Julie. Actually, Ray, you're right. I mean, when we sent the procedures, the things that absolutely had to be done in the procedures, you know, in time for the new council to be seated in Seoul, you know, there were certainly pieces that were done. My two cents is that I think that all Philip wants to know is what are the things that we're going to get done by Brussels, and actually, I think he's asking for June 1 in anticipation of things being ready, you know, prior to Brussels and being sent up to the council prior to Brussels. At least I've seen him send that date around in other discussions, I think, in the OSCE. But I would agree perhaps that one could just say, you know, GNSO operating procedures, sections, you know, 2.1, which, you know, and then just list the sections. Maybe we don't even have to list the title for the sections, but maybe we don't have to list them all separately just to say, you know, these are the things that we, you know, these are the sections that we're working on and we plan to have completed, you know, by June 1st.
All right, so I might...
This is Ron. Can I...
Ron, please go ahead. Yes.
I think I'm more in agreement with the staff view here. I think what Philip wants, and if I were him, this is what I would want. I'd like to know what has been checked off the list and what's outstanding. What's checked off the list is of less relevance to me if I were Philip, but what is still outstanding is relevant. You know, so what are the issues that are hanging there? I like the idea that we have it on one piece of paper, all the different elements, but I'm inclined to agree with what Ken mentioned, that if there's something that we're not even addressing, let's just take it out, because it has no relevance. But anything that we are working on, I'm happy to see that we actually have a sheet of paper that says these are the final things we need to do. So
now why don't we break it down this way? Why don't we have a high level? The GCOT's main task is to complete the GNSO Council Rules of Procedure. Then a section that says these are the rules of procedure that the work team feels are completed. These next section. These are the sections that the work team believes will be completed by June 1st. Next section. These are the sections that the work team has reviewed and has believes do not require any additional work. And then bottom conclusion, the work team anticipates its work to be completed on the rules of procedure by June 1st.
So, Ray, this is Ken, if I may.
I would
refrain from saying that the GCOT is handling the rules of procedure as opposed to sections. And let me tell you why. There's another team that's writing a chapter in the rules of procedure. It's going to end up being Chapter 6 for the GNSO work prioritization.
Okay.
That's not even going to go through the GCOT.
Yeah, I'm just
the
saying
working
it's
group team, the PDP process, those all have chapters, and they're not going to go through. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Okay, so, I mean, all I'm trying to get to is a conclusion that come June 1st, the GCOT will be of the opinion that its work, is completed for the rules of procedure. And then I might only qualify that by saying, I mean, while other teams are going to be submitting their work to be included in the rules of procedure, I still think that the rules of procedure fall under our umbrella, and we do have to look at those. So we can qualify by saying, pending work performed on certain aspects of the rules of procedure, the GCOT was unable to review by June 1st. I mean, is that a fair assumption that even though there are other teams working on aspects of the rules of procedure, at the end of the day, we're the work team that is submitting the rules of procedure to the GCOT? Or is that not an appropriate course of action?
Well, this is Ken.
The OSC, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that has become the mantra, as it were, for GCOT, but I went back and looked at the charter, and I really can't find any support for the rules of the GNSO operating procedures being entirely within the auspices of the GCOT. What I do remember is that at the beginning of the team's construct, what was desperately needed was a set of procedures that the council could be seated with, a minimal set of procedures that would get the council launched, and that was tasked to the GCOT. And I think just by, I don't know if it's osmosis, but it just gravitated, and other things then landed there, like the abstentions and then the term limits. But since there are clearly other significant chapters that will be written that are not going to be part of the GCOT, unless the GCOT ends up being extended for many months to come. And it has a full plate.
That's fine. I think Ron's going to go along with that. And, Ron, correct me if I'm wrong. Ron's going to go along with that thinking. And I don't disagree. So I think maybe a fourth section then that says these are the areas of the rules of procedure the GCOT feels are under the purview of other work teams. So four classifications. One, work done by the GCOT on sections that are completed. Here are those sections. Work not yet completed by the GCOT on these sections, and you list what those are. A third section, a review of the sections that the GCOT does not believe requires any work by the work team. And then a fourth section, that is the sections that the GCOT understands is being worked on by other work teams.
I support that. Yeah, this table actually would lend itself very nicely. All we have to do is just color these things a little differently. For example, we could take sections 6 and 7, 8 and 9 that are at the bottom of the GCOT list and just move them into a different team, right?
Ken, this is Julia. You won't be able to move them within that table because they don't fall within the OSC. So they'll just have to be labeled differently because they fall within the PPSC.
Ah, nice point.
Yeah. I mean, but I agree with you. I think you can take the content you have in that table and rearrange it along the lines that Ray has suggested, and then, you know, prepare that as a response that Ray could send back to Philip.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'm not trying to create more work for you, but what I would like to do is be able to say to Philip, okay, here's, you know, our primary task has been the rules of procedure. Here's what – is everybody there?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I thought it seemed dead there for a minute. Okay, so here are the rules of procedure. Here's what has been completed. Here's what is outstanding. Here's what we don't think we need to look at, and here's what's our understanding is under other work teams' purview. And then let him come back with any feedback from there. I think that's logical to me, if you guys don't mind doing that for us. Okay. So no issues with that? You guys don't mind?
This is Ken. I certainly don't mind, and I think between Julie and I, we can get that done for you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure. And Ken, I'd sort of ask you if you could do a first cut, since you're more familiar with the content there, and I'm happy, obviously, to look at it as well.
Yep.
As soon as I get my computer back. Ha.
Sold.
And Ron, you're okay with that?
I'm good with that, yep.
Thanks. Okay, so let's go on to the more, move away from the housekeeping and now over to the more substantive issues. So,
Ray, this is Ken. Let me just say one thing, and let's see if I'm clear about this. I don't think that in the current list of to-dos, mm-hmm. anything has been finished with the possible exception of the term limits chapter or section. In other words, the term limits is a to-do, and I think that most of the team members have decided that it's okay, but I think you probably need to call that question.
I think how we left that one was if there were no objections on the list to the language, you could go ahead and accept it as written.
Okay.
I think we had a healthy discussion on this last call. I don't think we need to revisit it. That's my recollection. Ron had to drop off a little early, but I think he was articulating that he was comfortable. He didn't care about the different – it wasn't as concerned, I should say, about the different thresholds as Avery was stating, and I didn't have any objections as that. So I thought the term limit was fairly well taken care of.
Yes, and there was one change that we got from Wolf about the stakeholder versus constituents. I made those changes, and so that – all right. Now, would it be okay to just kind of walk through each one of these, because there are only a few, and we can just say a word? I just try to get a status on where we are with these.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So the second one I have on this chart, right, is 2.4 board seat elections. So let me just tell you where we are with that. Today I finished up a draft after talking with Glenn de Saint-Géry about the that whole mechanism. That is, I'm going to send that to the team, but I did not want to send it an hour before the call. So
wait a minute. Let me back up. Back up.
Yeah.
Are we looking at that chart that I just sent around?
Yes.
Okay, where's 2.4?
It's the second white row.
I see it.
Section 2.4, board seat elections.
Okay, got it.
Staff to draft. I'm
okay,
just reporting
thank
to you.
You.
I now have that draft done. You will now be getting that document shortly. Okay, moving to the next white row, which says Section 3.8, vacancies and absences.
Okay.
That is work that is still pending with the team. There are some controversy, and I'm sure we'll get into that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Section 4, voting, has multiple subsections, and maybe if when I redo this, I'm going to tuck those all in one box, because in 4 is 4.1, 4.2, 4.3, 4.4, and 4.5, which is the abstentions, right? So all of that goes together under voting. And that one is still under review because 4.4 deals with absentee voting. And so one of the comments I tried to make in one of my last emails is a lot of these sections touch each other, and they relate to each other, and they tie together. So if we make a change in absences or we make a change in absentee voting, that may cause us to have to pull back other sections and fix those so that it's all consistent. Now, the last one is Section 5, the last row, which is Statements of Interest. And I think that one has been sent to the OFC. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
Yeah, Julie, this is Julie. It was sent to the OFC last week, I think, on
The table says 7 March.
Well, that was the Nairobi meeting. I think that's when that...
Yeah, but that was... Actually,
it was after 7 of March, yeah.
Yeah, it was after 7 of March.
Okay.
Well, it was posted for consideration on the wiki for the OSC, but it wasn't formally submitted. You know, at our last call, the week before last, we discussed that it needed to be formally submitted, which Ray has done, and, it's now at the OSC. And there have been a number of comments already on the OSC list on those.
Okay.
Thank you, Ray. That was helpful to me in a way, just to get a beat on where things stand.
All right. So when we submit something to the OSC, like sometimes we are doing that. We're parsing it out and then submitting it, like we did with the SOI, DOI. There's, we have to suspect that it could come back to us. So therefore, we can't say it's completed. I think that this sounds like one of those instances.
Well, Ray, this is Ron.
Yeah.
I'm on the OSC, as you know, as well, so I don't see. I'm not seeing any pushback on the SOI-DOI at this stage of the game.
Oh, okay.
And Ray, we don't have it marked as completed. The table actually just shows that it was sent to the OSC. The completed column is empty at the moment on statements of interest.
Yeah, and I look at that work product. And as far as we're concerned, as a work team, I would say it's completed.
Correct.
And that's part of my confusion with this.
Well, what we saw in another team, the communications team, was the OSC had feedback based on its final report, and we had to go back and change some of the processes or some of the elements of it and then resubmit it. In fact, just yesterday we resubmitted the final amended CCT, or communications report. So that could happen here, too, as you just intimated.
Yeah. Go ahead, Julie.
Yeah, and just a point of clarification, this chart that Philip has is the Operations Steering Committee work products, which we roll into. So it may be that your work team has completed its work on the SOI-DOI if no comments come back from the OSC, but the OSC hasn't completed its work until it's ready to send that work product up to the GNSO Council.
Yeah, and I guess I would like to be a little affirmative with the OSC on this, which is, yeah, I understand your issues and things you have to do, but as far as we're concerned, unless you tell us otherwise, this product, our work team feels it's a completed product, unless you tell us that you don't think it is, and give us, you know, reasons as to why, and we're reasonable people. So I'm just trying to, I really, when I communicate back to Philip, I want to be able to, you know, represent for our work team that these, we feel these items are completed. And that's part of my confusion, which is why I didn't just go back to Philip and say, yeah, this looks good to me, because I want to be able to identify in the affirmative that as far as the work team is concerned, representing the interests of the work team, that we feel this thing is completed, and how to do that now. So I understand his chart, and we've got to roll up into that chart, I guess, is part of the issue here. But on the other hand, I would like to see something where we can state that we feel this particular section is completed.
Well, this is Ken. I don't know how that – I'm not exactly sure how that gets done unless it'll be a special communication back from the chair of the OSCE. Just to take, for example, in Nairobi, we had submitted the voting section, right, including all the abstentions, and we put the executive summary on it, and we put the analysis of the all that, right? And
yep.
there were some constructive things that, yeah, and then we came back and we added vacancies after Steve Metallic. There were some other things that we changed that directly as well, that feedback. Whether that loop is finished or not on voting, I don't know. I mean, could the next time we send it in, could they come up with new things? I don't know.
Yeah, so I would say what we need is a completed, as far as we're concerned, and then another column in there that says pending OSC feedback. You know, I bet it's I just, you know, I don't have to send it back to him in his chart form. I could send him an email that says, you know, here's the chart the way you want it. In other words, I could just go back to him and say, yeah, Philip, I can confirm that what is in this chart as prepared by staff is accurate. Now, here's what I want to give you something in addition. These are the items that are completed. These are the items we don't think we need to look at. These are the items we think we can get completed by June 1st. These are the items we don't think are under the purview of a different work team. So that's what I'm asking for to do. Ron, do you have any comments on this?
I'm fine with what direction you're going. I mean, it doesn't matter to me one way or the other. But the point is, it's, you know, you're the chair. You need to be clear on this. So however you want to serve it up, it's fine with me.
Thank you. And it is my request at this time. I want to be able to be definitive with Philip on these things.
No, I think it's really important because the clock is ticking down, and effectively, what are we in, like, you know, first week of May, of April, so we've really got, you know, 7 weeks.
Yeah. And it helps us to prioritize, set our agenda, make commitments, try and meet those commitments. A good, solid outline with staff help on this would be useful. Whether it fits into this chart or not, you know, that's now coming to me a different issue.
This is Ken. I think I understand, Ray.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you want to continue to walk through ones that you want need clarity on whether or not
No,
we're going to do additional work on.
Yeah, no, this is Ken. I think we're good. It sounds to me like the SOI DOI is now off the GCOT's plate and into the OSC's hands. The 2.1 term limits is ready to be sent, but has not been yet. So I'll clean that document up, get it to you, and then you can send it to Philip, and that will be the second of that will be in that state, and then we can mark the chart or fix it so that we'll know. The rest of them, I think, are still pending.
Now, in that regard, this is Ron. In terms of the pending, my understanding is that we have addressed section 3.8 and then most of the section 4. There are a few itchies that are still there, but for the most part, that's almost, well, can we call it 90% done? Is that a fair characterization?
This is Ken. I think it is.
Okay. That's where I think it's at, too. So really, the only real action item that we have is this board seat election. And I think that was more of a cleanup item as opposed to any real thought, wasn't it? I mean, was there
Yes, and I don't think that's going to be contentious very much. I mean, Glenn and I have gone over those. I just needed to generalize the procedure rather than have it be specific dates, which was done for the annex for Board
right.
Seat 30. Yeah, that was a transitional thing, and I've done that now, and it's actually pretty short. And once you see it, I think you'll there might be a few little things we can tweak here or there, but I don't think it's going to be difficult at all.
Well, that's good news. So, Chair, my recommendation would be to give staff the time now to kind of clean up all these different documents and do the things that we've been discussing, get them out to the list with a request for all of the members of the team to give them the last review of what these elements are, and then get on a call and try and just knock them off, because I think we're pretty close to having it all complete. We just need to get enough people on board the call and people who have read through the final docs to say, okay, we're good to send this to the OSC.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think that's
I mean, rather than you and I, you know, kind of whittling away on one or two right now, I don't think that serves the purpose. I think we're, you know, as Ken pointed out, there's a couple of little itches he's just got to finalize. I'd like
right.
to see that done before I start looking at those documents again for the final review.
Yeah, this is Ken. I can certainly do that. The one issue that I would put it a little bit higher up than ticklish or whatever the term was you used, is the absentee voting. I think that that one needs some discussion of the team. I had thought in my head that there was some interest in generalizing the absentee voting rules so that it would be the default condition, meaning unless it was prohibited by some special reason, council members who were not at a meeting could absentee vote. That would be the default condition. After speaking with Glenn today and listening to Avery's comments, in fact, Ron and I think also Ray have all chirped up in recent memory here that says, whoa, 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 we don't want absentee voting to be done a lot. We want it to be done rarely. And I think that this raises a little bit of an issue for me in terms of the holistic procedure and the principles that we've established. And I'm happy to summarize that if you like, but I'll stop there for a second.
No, I think in a nutshell, Ken, what you're saying is there's a high-level principle here that if you are unable to make a vote, there should be a remedy to make one later.
That has been the team's general approach, and everything that we've done thus far with respect to abstentions was, you know, if there's some reason you can't vote, the stakeholder groups and constituencies have the right to have their vote done, and we provide various mechanisms and remedies
right.
to allow that. So it would be odd to say, except for absences. If you're absent, sorry, you lose your vote.
All right, so let me clarify. Let me clarify a little bit for you, okay? And Ron can chip in.
And
now,
Avery
has joined. Thank you, Avery. Let me clarify. So the concept here was a conflict of interest. And in the instance of a conflict of interest, we felt as a work team there should be a remedy in all cases of conflict of interest. And then it became what? Volitional or obligational and et cetera. I think my own opinion is you have morphed that high-level principle where we said there should always be a remedy in that instance over to absentee. And I don't think that's accurate. I don't
yes,
think that's correct.
I agree that I morphed it.
I don't think that's correct from the work team's perspective.
Okay.
Now, with that said, and this is me listening to others as well as myself, but with that said, if Avery has an opinion on that, or Ron, please.
Yeah, this is Avery, if I can.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened, and you know, definitely a innocent mistake, is that we had one category called conflict of interest, and then we directed that category into its obligational and its non-obligational, and applied the same level of you know, consideration to both, whereas what I think should have happened is that the consideration should have been limited only to the obligational and not to the rest of it. So I think it was in that step that in dividing one thing into two things, it was inappropriate to apply all the remedies of the unitary whole to each of its parts.
Yeah, so I'd agree with that. I understand why we made various remedies available for the two types of conflicts of interest. To me, the question becomes, for the incidental type of conflict of interest, is the high-level principle that we came landed there, should that apply also to the instances of absentee issues? And my feeling is no.
Well, then let me ask Avery, because Avery, you were the one that kind of brought this to the table, if I recall, and you said that you didn't like to see absentee voting happening within 24 hours or 48 hours, as is the case now, whatever that is,
no,
72
I
hours.
I didn't quite say that.
Tell me, please.
I meant that certainly for those critical things where absentee ballot has been deemed necessary, like policy, you know, PDPs, because those affect contractual conditions, and therefore there is an obligation, in a sense, for every stakeholder group to have representative views. On all the other stuff that a council can vote on, whether it's, you know, a change in a charter, approving somebody as the chair of a particular group, starting a drafting team, any of, you know, are we going to meet and have lunch on Saturday afternoon or Saturday morning during ICANN week. All of those things that get voted on do not need the heavyweight process of absentee ballot, which is a lot of work on the secretariat.
Mm-hmm.
It delays the fact that, I mean, in my whole time as chair, I don't think we ever had a meeting where everybody was present. I'm sure somebody could go back through the stats and find the exception where that happened. But I'm not immediately aware of any. That would mean any time we had a meeting, there would be an absentee ballot. Now, for the obligational conflict of interest, that makes sense. Because, you know, but if somebody keeps having conflicts of interest that aren't obligational but are purely voluntary, well, then maybe their stakeholder group should really wonder whether they're an appropriate representative and do something else about it.
Mm-hmm.
If they're absent from meetings all the time, well, maybe they should do something else about it. So I'm definitely not against absentee ballots for things that affect contracts, things that affect, you know, the GNSO policy decision. But for the rest of the stuff they vote on, I just don't see it.
If we start to bifurcate the processes of what gets voted, you know, this list is voted, this list, you know, we apply these rules, and this list, we, you know, we don't apply these rules. That's where we're just getting so into the minutiae of this thing. And I recognize that, you know, the operating procedures are probably about minutiae. But my concern is that we may be just driving this thing into another 10 pages long document.
But we've already got that. Already have the condition that says if it's not PDP or election, there's no absentee. That's no change from the status quo.
Then what happens in that? And just continue along that vein. So there's no diminution. What happens there? That vote just doesn't get counted?
Just like now, yes, doesn't get counted.
This can actually, though, I think that the way we've got it written, the counselor could abstain and then seek a remedy. I mean, that's provided in the procedures. Right.
And that's what strikes me as a problem, that we've got that for the non-obligational abstention.
Yes, I think Aubrey's doing something that's, I think, is very useful here, and that she's sort of pulling us back to the way that this whole abstentions got done.
Right.
And we did make a distinction between volitional and obligational abstentions, but we didn't apply the remedies differently. Anytime there's an abstention, I think maybe we even said, I have to go back and think about this, we might have even said, you know, the reason for the abstention isn't that important, or we weren't going to be able to... You weren't going to be able to know, right, if somebody...
We gave them the option if it was a volitional abstention. If it's obligational, they had to tell us why. Isn't that correct?
Except that we also made a provision that if it's classified, or as, what's the term I'm looking for, if it's not... can't be
not
disclosed, you can also put... You can note that. So you can say,
right.
I have an obligational abstention, but I can't tell you about it. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And so maybe if we go back and sort of re-architect it and say the only time that a remedy is available is in the limited case of an obligational abstention and not for any volitional cases, then we can remove the case of the absence situation.
All right. So
help,
let me
ask one other question.
Memory, though.
Sorry. One more question. So in this case, let's assume there's going to be a vote tomorrow. I'm a counselor. I get sick tonight. Can I call my president of our or chairman of our constituency and say, listen, I just can't make that vote? Do we allow for enough time? Do we allow for, you know, then Marilyn Cade in this case to call and say, listen, we're going to have Zahid Jamil is going to make that that vote on behalf of Ron. Is that possible because Ron's sick today? Or do we have are the processes, sorry, because there was that discussion about, you know, would someone actually be able to, you know, put in their notice that they cannot be there, their abstention, and then ask for
a temporary alternate.
Right, exactly. Do we allow for that? Is that possible? Because that was also one of the other issues, I think, that was kind of cumbersome.
Well, that's a voluntary abstention. You're saying there's 24 hours notice.
Well, it's not even that. It's probably 2 hours notice because I get sick tonight. I call first thing in the morning and say, I can't make that vote today.
A stakeholder group could have somebody on standby for these instances.
Right.
And it's a matter of reaching out.
Making that call.
Making that call, whatever that stakeholder group is, the procedures they come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's the chair of that constituents group that has to make the decision. I don't know. Whatever they come up with.
Right.
And then having that person ready to go, and if the stakeholder group has not, you know, have somebody in that capacity ready to go as a temporary.
I missed that opportunity.
Yeah,
yeah.
All we can do is make up the rules. Yeah.
I just found that paragraph, and it does say in 4.5, in order for any of these remedies to be implemented, all required procedures must be completed prior to the conclusion of the vote on the matter before the GNSO Council, including any time allowed for absentee voting. That might actually need to be reworded, too.
Yep, that last phrase particularly. But I think, okay, so that seems to be moving in the right direction from my point of view.
I think what you're saying, Ron, is just a matter of semantics of whether a voluntary abstention is the same thing as an absentee. You know, an illness for whatever. That's an absentee, but it's really the same thing as a voluntary abstention.
Yeah, and see where I'm coming from is I'm agreeing with Avery's got the best experience of all of us in this. Is she sat in the chair for those number of years, so as she's pointed out, it was very rare everyone was on the call or in the meeting. So as a result of that, we want to have something that's streamlined and is easy to implement. And that's why I ran through that scenario of what happens if, because
right.
if it's already there, or we just need to tighten up that language, then I think maybe we might have already knocked this one on the head. We just need to go back and look at it again with some revised wording that Ken and Julie could work on.
Yeah, so I'm kind of hearing, and I think Aubrey is logical in that there are already these prescribed.
This is Aubrey. I spoke badly.
What?
I I'm obviously in a minority here.
No, I
think having those remedies for voluntary abstention, and I don't know how far, whether they've already gotten approved, in which case we're stuck with them, I think that was a mistake. And I think extending that even further is compounding the mistake.
Yeah, and this is Ken. They have not been approved.
Right,
area.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So I think that itself was the mistake.
Yeah,
those should only apply to the obligational and not to the voluntary.
This is Ken. I'm going to just read a sentence here. And I guess this is the one that I think has been driving my understanding. We have in section of duty of counselors, constituencies, and stakeholder groups, given the council size and voting thresholds that have been defined, it is important that each stakeholder group or constituency where applicable vote decisively through its appointed or elected counselors on every matter that is before the council for action. that has always for me been the mantra, that is, the stakeholder groups own these votes, and if their councilors can't exercise them, then we find a way to get it done. And maybe that's been wrong, but that's what's been – I've been tearing down the logic from that principle all the way down. That's probably how it got the way it is.
My view, Aubrey, maybe I am disagreeing with you after all. I really
I think you are.
Yeah, I really don't see the harm. I'm trying to find the harm of somebody, even within 2 hours' notice, being able to enact a temporary so that that stakeholder group gets its voice. I don't see the harm in allowing that kind of remedy.
Okay. As I say, I see the harm in the basic overgrowing of the process. There will be absentee ballots for the Secretariat to manage on every.
No, not in that instance. The temporary alternate has to be at the meeting. The absentee, I'm saying I'm agreeing with you. Absentees now can only be in these three specific instances or whatever they are right now. Is it two or three? I'm not sure. But I get the logic of that. So absentee.
So absentee is that. You're just saying so that they could send in a substitute participant to all council meetings.
Yes.
Now, can they participate or. In other words, they participate in the meeting as full councilors for the meeting that they're there. Or are we saying that you pass that vote over to another council member? I forget what we're doing.
The proxy, the case of the proxy, this is Ken, is the least obtrusive measure. And to appoint a temporary alternate is a much more elaborate ordeal, and we recommended in the procedures it be used at the bottom end. Okay. If everything else fails, then you do a temporary alternate. So the first thing is you tell the councilor what to do, and if that doesn't work, use a proxy, and if that doesn't work, then a temporary alternate. But the question I'm wondering about is, let's say that a meeting is coming up, and I am going to abstain from voting, but I'm going to attend the meeting, okay? And I know this. And because I'm going to abstain, and Aubrey, for the moment, I'm accepting that we haven't adjusted for, this is a voluntary abstention. This has nothing to do with a conflict of interest. I just don't feel like voting on this measure, or I'm not up to date on it, or whatever. I follow our procedures. I write to my stakeholder group, and they institute a proxy so that my vote counts. Now, same situation, except that I can't be at the meeting, right? I am going to voluntarily abstain, and I know it in advance, but I also can't make the meeting. Is the fact that I am going to be absent now means that vote can't count, when if I attended and abstained, then it could count by using a proxy?
The result is the same, though, Ken, isn't it?
I don't think so.
Isn't the effect that the denominator doesn't change? The effect in both instances acts as a no vote.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
So the effect, the practical impact of that scenario doesn't matter.
Well, I'm sorry. No, it doesn't. It does matter.
Why?
Because if I abstain, if I attend the meeting and I know in advance I'm going to abstain and I seek a proxy, the proxy could vote yes. The proxy could say, my stakeholder group votes yes on this measure, so it's not a defective no. It's not a de facto no. But what I'm trying to do is draw a parallel. Now I'm going to voluntarily abstain, but I'm going to be absent. Does my absence trump the fact that I was going to voluntarily abstain and make it now no longer possible for my stakeholder group to vote yes because I'm absent?
And I keep going back to being in the complete minority on this. I don't think the volitional abstention should enable the SG to vote. The obligational abstention.
Thank you. That's a good clarification.
Whether I'm absent or not, and just to finish the sentence. I interpret that high principle that you stated about every SG has to do its best to get its full share of voting on everything means they have to make their counselors go to the meeting. Means they have to keep their counselors from having too many volitional abstentions unless they're doing it for a stakeholder group's point. Because then we end up with a funny situation where I can abstain, make my point, and get our vote in anyway. And so I interpret that statement to mean, yes, stakeholder groups are responsible, counselors are responsible, hell or high water, they're supposed to be at those meetings. And we keep making it possible for them not to be there, for them not to take a position, for them not to do any number of things. And as I say, the obligational conflict of interest for the lawyer,
I think,
is unavoidable.
Yeah, but
other
I think,
that,
Aubrey,
it's all avoidable.
Aubrey, I think just the only point you might be underestimating is that while, you know, I agree that not all the council meetings are fully populated, how many of those meetings could have potentially been fully populated by a voice of that group, of the respective group, if they were allowed to have the temporary alternate? We don't know the answer to that. So, but you might be underestimating that if you made the tool available, you would have a more of a population attending more meetings.
In other words, if for every three counselors we have a substitute counselor standing in the wings.
What are you saying, that for every...
But basically, for every three counselors we have one substitute basically standing by. And so, therefore, if anybody drops out, we always have a substitute to send in their place.
The opportunity for that substitute. Right now, there is no opportunity. So some of those that aren't making it to the meetings may have fallen into these last-minute circumstances that we know of. It might not just be their neglect, if you will, of not doing what they are obligated to do. It could be reasons, and we're acknowledging that. So all we're saying is make a tool available to the group.
I'm going to change my position, because I think from the perspective of a stakeholder group that's got six people, nah, it doesn't make sense to do it. From a stakeholder group that only has three people, it starts to be a more precious commodity, and perhaps it makes sense. And, of course, you have to do it for both if you're going to do it for one. So while I kind of don't like the idea of substitutes, I guess I got to sort of – I can understand if I only had three in my stakeholder group, I'd be nervous. Since I got six, I'm not quite as nervous.
And then if I may, switch it back over to absentee. Now, that's different. I think in that scenario, there have to, you know, that bar has to be higher. And I think we have outlined that bar already. To Ken's point of, suddenly I can't make my abstention, so I'm not able to effectuate my proxy. Well, you know, we can't script out every scenario, and I'm comfortable with it as is. But how do others feel?
Yeah, I'm feeling that way. At least I'm getting much closer on it, but I think that there's still some language that needs to be cleaned up, and I would like to read it again before I give my firm approval.
This is Ken. There were a lot of pronouns there. I wasn't sure what it is. You mean the way we have it currently drafted, or?
Well, my comment was that, you know, when I first spoke a few minutes ago, was that there are some things that are still in your computer that haven't come out, and there's a couple of elements that we've brought forward on this particular topic that could use some revision now that we've kind of fleshed it out a little bit better for you, so you understand where we're coming from as a work group. So I'm wondering if you can go back now and look at those documents and give that a rewrite. When I say look at those documents, I'm specifically speaking to this particular topic of being able to put a vote in place through the proxy, primarily through the proxy, or through an alternate if necessary. But there, as you said, if maybe there's not much to do here, Ken. But it seems to me you said there was. If you have to look at this document holistically, if you touch one part here, you've got to go and check the other part there. That's what I'm asking. I'm just saying, I think we've touched a few parts here, so I'd like to go back and look at that whole section again and read a clean draft of it. If you say, no, Ron, it's 99% there, we haven't really changed anything, then I'll go back and read that.
Yeah, this is Ken. I'm not saying that. In fact, I'm sitting here puzzled because I'm not sure what to write yet. Can we just go back to the absence question for a minute. The way I've written it currently in the draft that you have before you, I made a differentiation between a planned absence and a non-planned absence. And we said in the planned absence, you have two ways to get things done. If you're going to be missing the meeting, then you can use the absentee voting procedure, except that I had changed it to make it a default. If we restrict that now to a very narrow list, which I think I'm hearing you guys say, the number of times we should use absentee balloting should be limited to the list we have now or maybe even tighter. So let's assume that for a moment. I still have drafted in there that you could abstain. In other words, you can say, I'm going to be absent from the meeting, therefore I plan to, all my votes should be considered abstentions, and therefore my stakeholder group can use the abstention procedures to put in proxy or some other method to get those votes registered, even though I'm going to be absent. Unless absenteeism, not attending the meeting, requires a punishment in no vote gets counted, in which case I'd have to change the way it's drafted.
I'm not looking for punishments.
Oh, I didn't mean to be overdramatic, but in essence, the stakeholder group is deprived of an abstention remedy if the counselor is absent.
No,
whether you plan the absence or you don't plan.
We're looking to encourage participation and create tools and remedies that are reasonable to encourage participation. So if somebody is knows they're unable to attend for whatever reason, they want to invoke the ability of a temporary alternate by way of the abstention, as we call it, I don't see the harm in that.
This is Aubrey. I'd actually like to look at it slightly different.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
If we're going to allow for the abstention to be, and please don't take this wrong, gamed in that way, then we might as well be direct about it and say, in cases of absentee, you can invoke the substitution proxy rule.
Sure.
Let's not force somebody to do a fake abstention. If we think, and the only reason I'm buying it is because we've got the silliness of a three-person stakeholder group, and I think that's too few. But considering that we're going to buy this notion of, or suggest this notion of sending, a pinch hitter in, we might as well allow it for absentee as well as abstention and not require a fake abstention.
Right, yeah. And I wasn't inferring a fake abstention. No, I'm just articulating philosophical view, of how we're trying to create reasonable rules that encourage participation, not punish or otherwise restrict participation, but ways that reasonably can encourage participation.
And as I say, I hate the rule.
And Ray, can I ask you, when you say participation, do you mean attendance of counselors at meetings in person?
No, just attendance. The obligation, that a high-level obligation that you just read earlier that is placed on a council member, if we can recognize that in life there are times when an absence may happen for reasons we can't predict or know, but we just know they do. But allowing that counselor to fulfill their obligation by, if they have to, going back to their stakeholder group and finding a replacement or implementing one of those remedies. There is an individual obligation, but then there's also the obligation of the stakeholder group. Sometimes the individual needs to go back to their stakeholder group for assistance.
Right. This is Ken. It's starting to become a little bit clearer. So I think what I'm hearing is, if somebody is planning to be absent, the current limit on absentee balloting will stay the same. In other words, we won't open up the absentee balloting mechanism for absences any more than it is today. So if I'm going to be absent, planned, and the vote is not a subject that is in the list, then I have to abstain. I don't have to, but if I did abstain, then the stakeholder group could choose whether or not to invoke a remedy, right? That's what we're saying. if I am just absence, take the case that Ron, almost the case Ron put out a minute ago, the day of the meeting, that morning, I have a car accident or something, or I something happens, my phone lines go down, the power is out in the city, I can't even get to the meeting. If the subject of the vote is one of the availables for absence, then I can absentee vote. If it's not, then note that vote just doesn't get cast, and that's the way I've written the procedure. So does that sound like a workable mechanism?
To me, it seems reasonable. Now, I'll be quiet and hear others.
No, I find it reasonable.
Okay, so is that direction for you, Ken?
Right. Now, the other thing that I did in the new absences section, and I'm not sure if we've discussed this, if I know I'm going to be out, and I think what I said was two meetings in a row, that's considered a leave of absence, and that would generate the potential of having a temporary alternate. Was that? I don't think we ever discussed that as a group, but I just want to make sure that was okay with everybody.
Right, I'm
going
to have
to
get off this call shortly because I have a commitment I have to go to, but I would ask Aubrey that question. You know, does missing two meetings, in your view, is that sounds a little bit too small a number to me before we start saying that that's an absence?
A leave of absence.
A leave of absence, yeah. Aubrey, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah.
It does seem short. But then again, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's the kind of thing, I think leave of absences should be declared up front. I think multiple absences become a problem for a stakeholder group in terms of dealing with it with its council members, unless, of course, they happen to be board appointed, in which case there's not much you can do about it. But that's an aside. I think leave of absence, again, is something that has to be intentional, that you have to say, hey, you know, I'm going into the Arctic for the next month and I won't have access.
Right.
So I am going to miss out the next three meetings. So
right.
Please.
Yes. And this is Ken. I did write it that way, but then it occurred to me that what if somebody doesn't attend two meetings, doesn't say anything in advance, something just happened, right? So I created something called an effective leave of absence. In other words, if you don't contact anybody and you're gone for two meetings in a row, you are then determined to be on leave of absence, and then the stakeholder group has taken a remedy. Now, as Glenn points out, it's probable by that time that the stakeholder group's already taken action, but...
Well, I'm going to interrupt you there, Ken, because the question that goes through my mind is I have no idea if the officers from the BC show up for the meetings or don't show up for the meetings. How would I know? As a member of the BC business constituency. So right now we don't have a mechanism. So what's coming to my mind is that there should be a notice sent to the chairperson or president or the head of the constituency from which that individual is a member to advise them that two meetings have been missed. Because at this stage of the game, I don't think we have any sense whatsoever whether our councillors appear or don't appear, because many of the meetings take place by telephone.
Yeah,
yes, this is Ken, and so for an unplanned leave of absence, I said exactly that in these procedures.
Right.
But
is there a notice that goes to the constituency?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says when a GSO council member fails to attend two regularly scheduled council meetings consecutively without prior notification to the GNSO secretariat, and councilor has not voted using alternative means, the GNSO secretariat will advise the appointing organization that the councilor has satisfied the conditions for an effective leave of absence. At the appointing organization's prerogative, the remedy in 3.8.2 may be exercised immediately, which would be a temporary alternate. So, yeah, there was notification.
Yeah. Well, that works for me. That works for me.
And I must say, having board-appointed council members that I can't do anything about, it kind of works for me, too.
Perfect. I have to beg your pardon, everyone. but I need to be on the move. I need to be somewhere at 2:10, and it's a few minutes after now. So if you're going to continue further, I'll just say my goodbyes. If you want to wrap up, Chair.
I have another working call that I'm supposed to be at 5 minutes ago.
I think we're going to wrap up here, Ron.
Okay.
But I just want to ask Ken is if he has the direction that he thinks he needs to have.
I think I do. Right. I'm going to take a shot at it.
You've got somewhere.
And
we keep dumping work on you.
And I will describe what I've done, and I'm probably going to give you some new documents. There'll be ones you've seen before, but there'll be some things changed. I'll try to highlight what I've done.
Yeah, that's a good approach.
Perfect, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so with that said, unless there's any other business, I'm going to ask for the meeting to stop being recorded and adjourn.
Great. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you for everyone's participation today.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.